I'm Stargate Pioneer from the Starling Tribune, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
Did you just say womp womp?
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 157 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we are kidnapped by locals before pretending to be a false deity, then spend the rest of the show in training montage trying to get the underdogs up to snuff, before completely scrapping that whole plan at the last minute and instead pull an amazing prank on the invading army to win the day. And then things get dark.
Womp womp.
I am Jay, and with me in the GPR studio tonight is Haley. How are you doing tonight, Haley?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Keir got kidnapped and is actually in Vegas right now, so we will be raising bail money for him, so you can donate that to...
Yeah, make your checks out to Haley, H-A-L-E-Y. But this week, we discuss the fun and frivolity that comes with a Viking tale, The Girl Who Died. With a name like that, who wouldn't expect hilarity to ensue? Good times all the way through.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was actually surprised by this, because this, you know, typically I'm not a fan of the rompy episodes, but this right. one really did feel like a romp, but it was enjoyable the whole way through. It was just a great ride.
It was probably mostly because Maisie Williams is awesome.
There is that, yeah.
Yep.
I love the interplay between the Doctor and Clara through most of this, where it's you're getting a lot more of the companionship between them now, mm-hmm. you know, and seeing how Clara is, you know, integral to the Doctor's life at this point.
Yeah.
But I love the bit where he's explaining about premonition, how it's just remembering things in the wrong direction.
That was brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, that was a great little line. I don't even know if that was Matheson or Moffat saying that, but I was like, wow, that's going in the notes. I like that one.
And then we had him earlier talking about, you know, how much he is and isn't allowed to muck about with time. And he talks about ripples and tidal waves.
Right. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. You know, just this is one of those where, especially after the time travel that we had last week, it was a great little tack on at the beginning of this one to be like, yes, we can do time travel, but we have to do it carefully. So it kind of helped to solidify what happened last week.
Mm.
I think the whole cold open was a lot of fun in this one. You know, you've got Clara floating through space and the Doctor just doing his thing in the TARDIS. And then, you know, and the great segue to just get him outside of the TARDIS. He steps on the spider. He's like, I'm going to go wipe my boot off on the grass. And it's a great excuse to get outside the TARDIS.
So his instructions to the TARDIS were find grass.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. It's like, I need something to wipe my shoe on. Just go there.
He couldn't use one of those rails somewhere in the TARDIS.
No, that's going to be gross. Although
go ahead.
I was going to say the sonic glasses got broken. I was just at the point as we were watching him, he pulls them out and he puts them on. I'm like, oh.
Oh, here not we go this. Again.
Yeah, that was my exact reaction, was like, okay, crap. They're starting to get overused. Oh, they just got snapped in half. That kind of works.
Brilliant.
It didn't stop their functionality, though. That's like,
I was kind of hoping he would wear the one and pretend like that was his Odin thing. He would be one-eyed Odin because he was just wearing
right, kind of like the
Viking was when he walked into the village.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, I mean, the yo-yo is clearly the sign of Odin. I mean, that's grade one stuff.
How would you know? Have you met Odin?
Poof, Odin. It's meant to do that. Although, did you get a very strong Monty Python vibe when Odin did appear?
I got a very strong SG-1 vibe when he appeared.
Okay, very different direction.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just like he popped up in the cloud, and I was thinking this is exactly like, you know, Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Mufasa?
Oh, man. But, you know, the peril really gets ratcheted up right from the beginning, but even then, it doesn't feel like it's too dangerous, you know, that, you know, Clara and, what is it, Ashilda?
Arya? Oh, right, yeah. Sure.
They're, you know, they get kidnapped, but then they're almost immediately out of danger. I mean, we see, okay, the Vikings get vaporized, but these two are safe and get sent home. So it really did say, okay, there are stakes here, but they're not going to be too serious for us.
Until the end when someone dies. Spoilers.
Come on, it's not like they put that up front in the title or anything. Don't ruin it for everybody.
I like that Clara was about to doctor talk her way out of this whole situation. Oh, yeah. And then Ashilda comes in and starks it all up.
Yep, pretty much. She's good at that. Yeah, it was great seeing that, you know, Clara understands the situation. She knows how to exactly to play it to get rid of them. It's like, okay, the damage is done. Let's just mitigate the rest of it and make sure that they go about their business. And no. And now she understands what it's like to have a companion who won't keep her mouth shut.
Is that what she meant when she said, fight you for her? Like, you know, is she going to be my companion or yours?
Right. That's a very good possibility. One thing that I did enjoy about this one was the doctor speaking baby. Because this time it seemed like it was a more useful thing for the plot instead of just a gag for a laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the doctor seemed affected by it too. Like, yeah, I mean, there's that moment where he's just, you know, puts his hand on the post and he's like, he feels what the baby's feeling at that point. And it seemed a lot more realistic than the, oh, I speak baby. He calls you not mom, you know. It's
Stormageddon.
Yeah. But it did make a lot of sense though, the way that they played it out, and it helped to advance the plot. I liked it.
Mm. The baby had the brilliant plan all along.
Oh, exactly. The baby knew what to do from the get-go. He just didn't know how to verbalize it.
Yep.
Or she, sorry. She needs right, changing. But I did enjoy the training montage that, I mean, how many times have we seen this trope? Normally in sports movies, I mean, think right. The Mighty Ducks, you know, you take the underdogs, you train them real hard and you get everything going and there's, you know, a lot of fun and stuff happening. And then at the end, they all pull together and manage to pull it off. And they followed that trope right up to the end. It's like, oh, wait, screw that. No, we're going to go with this plan.
Well, actually, no, it keeps going because at the end they win with a wacky play that would never work.
Exactly. The electromagnets powered by eels.
We've got Coach Doctor going over the play on the chalkboard, X's and O's.
No, but I did like that, though. They didn't play it out like a heist where, you know, as they describe the plan, they show it happening. Mm-hmm. But they kind of, like, put all the pieces in place. Like, okay, we're going to need all the silver lining out of Clara's suit. We need anvils hung up here. And it's like they're telling you all the pieces, but you don't know how it's going to get played out. And I thought that was really well done.
Yeah. They tell you what all the components of it are. They just don't give you enough information to understand what's happening.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I like that. It was nice because it's not like they're hiding anything and you still get to have fun as you discover it. It was good stuff. Yeah. But I like the fact that because Ashilda is a storyteller, she has all these stories and stuff. It sets her drastically apart from the rest of the practical Vikings who, you know, only do practical Viking things. And it seemed kind of reminiscent of Hiccup from How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, I could see that.
The little outcast who, you know, has this useful talent or, you know, has this talent that, you know, has a purpose, but nobody knows quite how to use it. And so they become the outcast.
And then she saves the day with her outcastiness.
Because of her amazing puppet. That really seemed so crazy. It's like, oh,
that they actually played the Benny Hill music over it. Brilliance.
Oh yeah.
Complete and total brilliance.
Because I was actually watching it with my friend, and it came up, like Clara said, the Benny Hill thing, and I was like, and she asked, what's the Benny Hill thing? And I started trying to sing it, and it didn't work very well. And then they started playing it. It's like, okay, oh, she's like, oh, that's okay. I get that. That makes sense.
And then, you know, when they cut to that video, it kind of looks like a classic Doctor episode.
It kind of did, because it's one person sitting there with the camera at a weird angle. And
yeah.
It was good stuff.
Made the costume look a little cornier, because it was, you know, a weird cell phone video.
Was it just me, or did Odin's makeup really, really bother you?
Yes, because it looked like a fake beard and then way too much eye makeup.
Oh, yeah, he was definitely way heavy on the guyliner.
Yeah.
But the what were the aliens called? Was it the Maya or the Mire? Because I've heard it said both ways.
I think it was the Mire.
Okay. Yeah, they were a weird design. Like, they almost looked like lampreys.
You know? Yeah, they looked awfully corny. I thought.
They seemed like a classic Doctor Who villain.
That was exactly what I thought. Like, you've got kind of the tank armor, and then you take the helmet off, and it's clearly a rubber mask.
Although it was kind of interesting how they revealed it, too, where it's like you start to get a sight of it when Odin takes off his hologram face, and then you're like, oh,
but well, they just kind of show, like, the back and his ear or something.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we don't actually get to see it, and... All right, and then they, you know, when they pull off the helmets and stuff, then you get the full effect, and it's like, oh, darn, I was hoping for something better. It's very much like Cold War, when the Ice Warrior finally took his helmet off. It's like, oh, it's just crappy CG. Dang. So I have to say, when the Doctor was messing with the helmet and pulled the whole, he's reversing the polarity on the neutron flow, I lost it. I started cackling hysterically at that point.
Didn't he then say, that doesn't actually mean anything, but it sounds important?
Something like that. Yeah, it was great. I love the callback. That was hilarious. But and we actually got the, well, I don't know how complete it is, but we got the explanation of the Doctor's face.
Exactly. It's supposed to remind him that he saves people.
Yeah.
Even if he can't save everybody, he saves people.
Right. Although it was kind of funny, let me see if I can pull it up here, actually, the reaction, because we have discussions with friends throughout the week, and this was one of those things that came up in the discussion, that the face and how it plays out, and our friend Badger, when we were discussing it, let me see, yeah, so he says, so I look like the guy that I broke the rules to save. Therefore, remember to break all the rules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
100% Rebel Time Lord.
Exactly. I mean, we've been promised. Here it is.
Rules are for chumps.
Yeah, but one thing that Keir put forward during that discussion is, you know, I learned some time ago that there are reasons to break the rules. People who warrant a harder look. You know, and the Doctor had that connection with Ashilda right from the get-go. Yeah, and he didn't even know what it meant, but he knew that there was something. So it makes sense that would remind him, you know, sometimes you have to go beyond, you have to break the rules in order to get the person, you know, to do what is right, or to do what, you know, feels right at the time, or I don't know.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
But, you know, this, one of the parallels I've heard drawn is that the fires of Pompeii came shortly before the, you know, like the waters of Mars and the Time Lord Victorious and that kind of thing. And it seems like that could be what we're seeing again, where the Doctor's questioning just how much he has to stick to the rules. He's really thinking, you know, I've got this power. Why don't I use it to do more just because of these rules? And I can see that playing out. And this could potentially lead to the return of Gallifrey. You know, he starts breaking rules, and then the Time Lords have to come back and put him in check because he's, you know, causing more damage than he's correcting.
Yeah, I could see that. Also, since we're starting to look forward a little bit, I think we're going to see, you know, the second half of this episode next week, obviously, with The Woman Who Lived. I wonder, having not seen it at all yet, if it would have been stronger if they'd put another one of the two-parter episodes in between these two halves. Like
have it be...
Like the Doctor
gap.
Goes off and continues having other adventures, and then he runs into her again.
That's an interesting thought. I haven't put that one given that one much thought yet, but that could be potentially a good way of doing it.
Obviously, that's not the way they went. We'll see next week exactly what happens. And maybe there's a good reason for it to not happen that way. But it was just a thought I had watching the preview at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Because I think after this one, we get another two-parter, the Zygon ones. The Zygon inversion and invasion. Actually, invert that the other way around. Yeah. But so that, I don't know. It'd be kind of interesting. Or maybe if they put the two standalone episodes, like 9 and 10, in there instead. But
yeah.
I don't know. So far, granted, we've only gotten two stories so far completely, but I like the way that they've been doing it so far. Yeah. It's worked out okay. So
it feels like a strong season.
Yeah, but this one didn't have the traditional cliffhanger that the other ones have. Yeah, this definitely felt like it could be a standalone episode, and then the next one could be a follow up. So you don't have to have them back to back.
Yeah, that's what I thought watching it, which is why I wondered how it would work if they had split it.
Mm-hmm.
But
so, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, and it might be something that in future rewatches that somebody tries it out and says, nope, works much better this way. Do it right.
Nope. Next time you watch the show, just go watch it all in reverse order.
So one of the things I've heard tossed around is that after this episode is aired, it's like, wow, this is a really convoluted backstory to introduce Susan. It's like, oh, people are still on that. Jeez. So, all right, one of the things that this kind of hinted at, well, actually stated expressly, is the whole hybrid thing that we got from Davros at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think that it's actually, do we think that she is the hybrid? Do we think that she could potentially be the big bad of the season?
I would have said no right up until that last shot of her face.
Right, where she looks all...
Yeah. Right. So they start, you look at her face, and she's got this like look of wonder and joy on her face.
Mm-hmm.
And it spins all the way around her, and it's clearly showing that a huge amount of time has lapsed, and then you get back to her face, and it's like horror and grief, and she's seen everything she loves die.
Yeah.
And then the second after that grief, her face kind of hardens for a second.
Right, and then she becomes Arya.
Yes.
Yeah, it definitely, you can see her becoming a villain at that point instead.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be enough to carry, as far as we're aware, that it could be a secret that they're keeping, but I don't think that they'd be able to keep that one under wraps very well. But she's only in these two episodes, so I don't expect her to pop up again towards the end of the season.
Right. But again, that's as far as we know. So
yeah.
If she only showed up in the finale, if she wasn't in a bunch of episodes, then it's possible. Or if it was small parts that they could film while they were doing these two episodes and then sprinkle them through the series.
Kind of like they did with Missy in Series 8.
Yeah.
That's potential. I don't know. I don't see her being the big bad kind of thing. And she would have to be really, really bad in order to be, the thing that drove the Doctor away from Gallifrey. What made him run in the first place. And I don't see this carrying that kind of weight.
Right. And whatever she did would have to have repercussions enough that they spread throughout time.
Yeah. And right now, all we know is that, she lives for a long time, but she sticks on Earth in the European area. And yeah, I don't see that caring. It's like the Doctor said, it's like, no, the world is not in danger. It's just one village. It's like, how much havoc is one girl really going to be able to cause?
She grows up to be the face of Bo.
So that's one thing that was tossed out when we reached out to listeners for feedback on this episode. Andy jumped in and said, if she lives forever now and she has a spare chip, how about her installing it in Jack and they live happily up thereafter? Just avert the whole face of Bo thing. He actually, stays the, handsome John Barrowman.
I think it's unfortunate that we never got a little bit more of that storyline.
Yeah, but at the same time, that went so dark that you really can't explore it on Doctor Who anymore.
I know.
He was not the same character that he was. But I know that the Titan comic line has done some great stuff with the Ninth Doctor miniseries that's got the Ninth Doctor and Rose and Jack running around doing their adventures and stuff, between, what was it, the Empty Child and the Doctor Dances and then the series finale.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some adventures that take place in there, and that's the span of that comic series. It's a little miniseries, cool. And it's great stuff. So
nice.
Yeah, if you want some more Jack with the Doctor and Rose, that's definitely a good place to go to. Some of the other feedback that we got, Preston wrote and said, 3 minutes in and finally no more Sonic glasses. Ah, justice. But I will point out, though, that the Sonic glasses were there again in the Next Time trailer.
So he must have just, like, got a whole kit of them made up.
That or they're just going to have, like, electrical tape right around the bridge of the nose.
That would be better.
And they spark every now and again when he tries to use them. That'd be great.
Oh, that would be fantastic if he tried to use them all the time, but they didn't always work.
It's like the TARDIS now. He just has broken stuff all over the place. It's great. And then Jonathan on Twitter wrote and said, Maisie Williams will be the season's big bad. You know, remember Davros' prophecy of the hybrid. And then said, she is the only person who fits that description of hybrid. It's probably a red herring, but it would be interesting. So, yeah, it's... I wouldn't mind. Well, and then we did point out to him that, you know, there's also Donna who kind of fits that same characteristic.
I would love if they it would be horrible. I shouldn't even say it. But if they brought back Dr. Donna just to finally kill her off, really.
Oh,
it would be horrible.
But she is dead. Like, it's not the same Donna. It's just remember, you never forget your first doctor unless you're Donna.
Oh,
still too soon.
Still too soon. Always too soon.
Yeah, so it seems like most everyone that I've talked to about this has enjoyed this episode, and it was a great ride. It was a great little romp. But then at the end it really went serious. That's a hard transition to pull off, and it's not something that you see a lot. Most of the time they stick with the rompy thing, or if they do try and change, it's such a jarring shift that it doesn't really work all that well. Mm-hmm. So I was surprised that it was able to work that well in this one. So you have any more notes on this one?
The only other thing was back in the conversation between the doctor and Clara, where he was talking about, you know, how he's got to protect her and keep her safe. And she's like, I'd never asked you for that. You don't have to do that.
Yeah, his duty of care speech.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was foreshadowing, where she's going to start being more insistent that she can take care of herself, and then she's going to get in a situation where she can't, and it's going to be like, bye-bye, Clara.
So we're predicting her demise again. It's worked out so well before. If we just keep doing it, eventually we're going to be right.
I'm 100% certain that she's either going to die or not die at the end of this season.
I think you may be onto something there. That could be
accurate.
Of course,
it is Stephen Moffat, so there's always a third option.
Right, die and then come back, and then die again, and then come back.
And then die, but you're actually saved to a computer mainframe, so you're kind of dead, but not really.
Mostly dead.
Only mostly dead.
All right, well, there's actually... So one thing that Keir did do, he wanted to be able to chime in on this episode, so he actually recorded his own segment. So let's go ahead and take a listen to that one right now.
Well, good evening, GPR listeners. This is Keir joining you from star-dappled Las Vegas, one of my least favorite towns, but it's all right. At least I get the opportunity to talk with you folks for a couple minutes. My reaction to episode 5, The Girl Who Died. Wow. This was absolutely the sort of combination of humor and action and story development and character complexity that I had been hoping for quite some time. The pacing, absolutely fantastic, and big kudos to Ed Bazalgette as director for keeping the pace exactly where it needed to be for something of an episode of this type, which... Knowing your two writers, between Jamie Matheson and Stephen Moffat, you've got, well, as we've discussed at length, the kind of reliance that we have on Matheson for his humor. Just brilliant comedic elements throughout this entire episode. They're so fantastic. You know, nothing is wasted as far as the jokes that are conducted. They're used for both moments of warmth, and they're used for moments of tension break. So just phenomenal stuff from Jamie in that court. Moffat is the heart of this, you know, and when we get to that turning point in the episode, you all know exactly what I'm talking about, that dark twist that leads to the Doctor's empowerment you know, the oh my God, the discussion of who frowned me this face and his realization that, yes, he has been living under and existing and defining himself under these constraints and these rules that he has run up against at full tilt so many times, but has always kept himself on this side of the wall. But he is a doctor and he saves people. That's Moffat. That's Moffat's wordplay. That's some of the brilliance that when he is firing on every piston, that's what you get out of it. And you can't tell me, please, Moffat haters, come out and tell me, come at me, bro. Tell me that that did not move you in the slightest. The mechanics of this episode were done so well in that there was no time wasted on the setup. You know, you look at the clock, you're 10, maybe 11 minutes in, and you already have your villain established. You have a threat to your principal characters. You have a reason for that threat. It's not something where we're finding out, why are we being attacked by this? No, you have all of that, and now it's a matter of what do you do with it for the 40 minutes that follow. So that's extremely well conducted. The dynamics that we're getting between some of our principal characters, between Doctor and Clara, I mean, the Doctor starts out a bit bumbling at the start, you know, kind of shades of Patrick Troughton, just sort of, you know, there's the ongoing joke about the fact that there is no plan, but he's convinced that the plan is going to come to him, and Clara is going to guide him to that plan. You know, she has that wonderful quote, he doesn't have a plan yet, but he will. And it will be spectacular. You know, it's an excellent choice of words because that is, it's the spectacle of what it is when it becomes clear to him that just makes this such a magical moment. Clara herself is capable and keeps demonstrating her capability, but she's aware of her strengths and her weaknesses. She's seasoned at this point and knows how to keep herself within what she knows she can accomplish, but she knows the Doctor so much better now. She guides him, but she doesn't do it in some sort of way that implies that she knows the solutions that he can't see. She is the catalyst. She is the driving force to bring him to this realization that even at those moments where he feels that, well, all I can do is try to train them to survive as long as they can, but they're all going to get slaughtered the next day, she won't allow that to stand. She may not have the plan, but she knows he will come to it. I wasn't entirely sure about how things were going to go with the baby's cries and using that as that was the dropping penny that got him to realize, oh, the fire and the water and those things. That felt a little unusual. The jury's still out on that one. I can't determine whether it was really effective, and the fact that the baby's cries were this gorgeous poetry of observation as seen from the limited range of understanding of an infant, that's either really effective or it was a bit over the top, and I'm not exactly sure where that is just yet. I'm really going to have to look at those lines again very, very carefully. Not specifically the lines that were translated from Baby, but the way the Doctor interprets them and the way the characters react to what those things are actually saying when they're spoken in their tongue, so to speak. Isildur, this... You know, I watched Game of Thrones. I probably, you know, went through most of the seasons. I will admit, I tapped out after a little while. But as far as Maisie and her character within that program, you know, the Arya Stark character, and where that arc has gone, I was really hoping that I was going to get something very different from Isildur in this, and I absolutely did. You know, you see the way that she carries her perceived curse so well, the fact that she believes herself to be this ill omen, this token of bad luck upon her village, and you see the way she carries that, and even at the points where she wants to be something bigger and prouder and more and valued, this nagging at the back of her, and Maisie does an excellent job of carrying that, both in her delivery and just in her demeanor. I'm really, really impressed with this, and I hope that we get more of this in the episode to follow. The Odin character and the Mayan race, a little odd. you know, it struck me as shades reminiscent of the Centauran single-mindedness on war and the glory of war, and that myopic viewpoint that keeps them from seeing the fact that you can't even tell when you've been beaten. It was interesting, but maybe just slightly underdeveloped. I don't really know. It makes me wonder how this is carrying into the next episode, because we call this a two-parter. The only thing that's really carrying over in this is Isildur and determining what the story is with this hybrid theory. I don't know, these repair kits that have been adapted from the Mayans, if it were that easy, shouldn't these Mayans be nearly immortal if these kits keep working on them repeatedly? Or is this some sort of an amazing alteration that the Doctor was able to pick up on that their own creators couldn't determine? I haven't really locked that one in yet. But some of the moments that I genuinely enjoy in this particular episode were the ones that, while everything is happening at full pace, there are these jumps back and forth between a humorous moment and then a moment of concern and then a moment of action and then a moment of alarm and disaster, but then a moment of humor to lighten it. And it just kept flipping and flipping and flipping. You know, the die kept rolling and you'd get something different on every turn. But it never felt scattered. It never felt like it wasn't well constructed. This was carefully assembled as it was. And now I really need to know what it is that they're setting up from here. Because this is big. They're playing with this term hybrid that they've been bandying about a little bit. We're not really sure how large or small scale this is really supposed to be. This could be Moffat playing with us and trying to lead us into something that's supposed to be a far larger picture, or it is perceived as a far larger picture, but it gets itself resolved and dismissed without being quite as much of a major disruption. But then again, the Doctor makes these statements about the fact that this is no longer ripples. These are tidal waves. He's taken a huge risk here in doing what he's just done. And he's given her a second one of these patches because of his understanding of what loneliness is about in these long lives or these near immortal lives, spending them alone. Where, if you're going to trace it back, and I know there have been a number of theories going out there so far about what this could possibly imply, is this connected in some way to Jack Harkness? Is this, you know, is this something where it leads us to Susan? Or, you know, is this back to the original hybrid that Davros was talking about in the previous two-parters, where it means that we're now suddenly circling ourselves back on what drove the Doctor from Gallifrey in the first place, which is an extremely long tie-in if you really want to do that, and that's pretty bold on Moffat's part if he thinks that that's the connection he's making. I don't know. I'm a little concerned about that. I'll admit that. But, you know, all in all, looking back on this, having watched it probably about 3 times now over the course of the last 3 days, which is really ticking everyone else off here for these conferences that I'm here for in Vegas, like you're saying, oh, well, I've got to get back to the room and send some work emails and things, and I'm coming back to watch Doctor Who, because please, it's me. There are some other moments out of this, outside of some of the controversial aspects that I'm going to have to continue to wrestle with and lose sleep over. Yes, I do lose sleep over some of this stuff. The shades, I'm pretty sure they're gone now. We've only seen what's left of the right half of them, which means the left half is probably smashed into the mud somewhere in the Dark Ages. The face of Odin's first appearing in the clouds, please tell me you didn't think that was something, you know, the face of God in the clouds in Monty Python. That was an entirely Python bit there that they were doing, and kudos on them for picking up on that. And then, of course, you know, making puddings and babies, because that's basically what you all do. I adored so much of this episode, and the only thing that gives me pause is to see whether this truly is a two-parter or whether it is, in effect, 2 standalone episodes that have a clear character link. We don't even have scenes from the next to go on. This was a strictly TBC, run to the credits, and go. But I don't know. I think there are some aspects, there's some groundwork that has been laid here, even aside from Maisie Williams' character, but in the Doctor and Clara's relationship, you know, it's almost lost in the moment, but the Doctor gives a such a poignant line to Clara. He looks her dead in the eye and says, "Clara Oswald, what have I made?" And that, I paused the episode on second watch because I was looking carefully for some of these little moments, these little barbs that were hooking into something much larger. And that was definitely one that gave me pause, because that, I think, is where the relationship stands right now. Clara knows the Doctor so much better than she ever did before, that many companions have ever gotten the opportunity to know their Doctor, to the point where they are not just observing and reacting and participating and being a part of the action and the adventure, but she's predicting, telegraphing, supporting, advocating, and serving as catalyst. And a reminder to the Doctor about what makes him spectacular. Again, her words. That speaks volumes, and I think it needs to be well recognized, because I didn't think, if you were going to tell me 12, 14, 16 months ago that this Clara Oswald character was going to be that valuable to her Doctor, I would have told you to suck an egg and go back and watch, Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane, or a relationship of that sort, where they had become so comfortable with one another that they were as much of a support system for one another as they were just close friends. But this is achieving that level, which for me to say, come on, you people know me, for me to say that this is starting to aspire to a Fourth and Sarah Jane relationship is difficult for me to say, but I'm saying it because I believe it. And you can go ahead and tear me, limb from limb if you choose to. Kira at GallifreyPublicRadio.com. Go ahead, have at me, because I'm willing to defend this one systematically. So where does it go from here? Who is the woman who lived? I don't care to guess, because right now I am at a fascination point with the show, where I'm really surprised to see some of the major risks and ripples and tidal waves that Moffat is willing to take with the show right now, and I'm gaining respect for the man by the day. And at the same token, I'm cursing him for not having these kind of cojones a year ago, 2 years ago, or potentially even earlier. But yeah, this has been something. So, as I'm recording this, I've still got a little ways to go before I'm going to get any kind of teaser trailers or looks into the next episode for The Woman Who Lived. But I'm just going to revel in this for a little while. So, to my daring duo back in the GPR studio, miss you kids. You know I'd rather be home discussing this with you right now, really, because, again, as I said a couple of minutes ago, I'm really not a big fan of Vegas, especially when I'm out here for work. So I'll be back soon to talk with you guys about this more. And please, hey, folks listening at home, really, we know you got your opinions. We know that you may agree or disagree with us on some of this stuff. Talk to us about it. Get on the site and put some comments in. Get on Twitter and ball us out, or call us gods or monsters, or both. Godly monsters, monsterly gods. I'll take anything in the deity range. That's fine. The Facebook comment threads, direct emails to us, feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Just talk to us, because this is such an amazing time to be a Whovian right now, and we really want to share this with you. But us just talking at you is only half of that. Give us the conversation back, because this is amazing stuff. And even if you can't stand it, if it's driving you crazy for whatever reason, God, I want to know about that too, because I want to know where it's missing the beat for those people that just aren't clicking with it. So yeah, let's get this conversation going. Let's talk about this, because it's going cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs right now, and I'm personally enjoying the hell out of it. So here out on GPR remote locale, it's Kier. Have a great night. LNZ.
I am both completely appalled and in total support of what you said, sir.
I'm just disgusted. I can't believe you actually said that on the air.
So, yeah, if apparently you guys got to listen to it before we did because he hasn't sent me the segment yet, but that's where it's going to go. And I'm sure it was verbose and brilliant and at the same time, completely irreverent and, you know, all the things that make up Kier. So,
yep. Well, I did. There's one other thing that I forgot to say.
Oh yeah.
Immortality is everybody else dying.
Yes. I love that explanation because really that's the crux of it right there. I mean, it harkens back to the, to school reunion, you know, with the doctor explaining to Rose, like, you know, you can spend the rest of your life with me, but I can't spend the rest of my life with you. You know, and it's just great that they're tying back to some of the things that they've brought up earlier in the series and explaining them so well and so succinctly. It's great.
Well, and, you know, just illustrating these things again for a new audience, because there are people who watch now that didn't see School Reunion.
Mm-hmm. What?
What? But they have no excuse. They should go back and watch it because it's on Netflix.
Exactly. Jeez. Now, the proper viewing order is go back and watch An Unearthly Child and just work from there.
Yeah. I'm going to catch up to these new episodes any day now.
Yeah. Which season are you in now?
One.
Yeah, we'll make some headway in the off season. It'll happen.
Okay. We'll get there.
All right. Well, there's really not a lot of news this week. Really, the only thing that we wanted to talk about is, you know, we are huge fans of Big Finish here, and we've been talking about that a lot. The next Eighth Doctor story, Doom Coalition, is actually out right now. You can get your copy, head over to bigfinish.com and pick that up. It's $20, actually, if for the digital version. So don't even have to wait for it to get delivered. You just pay your monies, and it downloads, and you can be putting it in your ear holes within a matter of moments.
Or maybe not moments if you've got really slow internet. It takes a while to download. Sucks for you. Yeah.
Go to the library. Get it there. I don't know. Yeah, so I actually have a copy of it sitting on my hard drive. Mm-hmm. I have not had a chance to listen to it yet. Things have been crazy busy. But this is definitely number one on the list for me to listen to. I cannot wait. This is going to be good stuff. So for anyone that followed the Dark Eyes series, this is basically going to pick up right where that left off. You've got Liv Chinko running around with the Doctor. So I'm super excited about this, and I can't believe I haven't started listening to it just yet. So, but that is about all the news that we've got this week. Next week we'll be back with our review for the Woman Who Lived. Slightly more promising title. I wouldn't be surprised if they actually reverse it and make that one incredibly dark.
It's the one where she really, really dies.
Yep, at the Doctor's hand. He kills her. Goes all Hulk smash and just, I don't know. Anyway, this has been episode 157 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, there's nothing I can't do, but I'm not supposed to.
And this is Haley saying, Crom, I have never prayed to you before. I have no tongue for it. No one, not even you, will remember if we were good men or bad, why we fought or why we died. All that matters is that two stood against many. That's what's important. Valor pleases you, Crom. So grant me one request. Grant me revenge. And if you do not listen, then to hell with you.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2015.